All right, fan pregame on a Friday. Justin Cuthbert and Jesse Rubinop up on Sportsnet 360, excuse me, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and Sportsnet Plus. Ailish Forfar is down in Detroit for one of two neutral site events across a PWHL showcase weekend. She'll be rinkside for Boston, Ottawa, Little Caesars Arena, and live from a hotel room, I think, maybe an airport, maybe a bar in 5 minutes to tee up the game, which will be on Sportsnet 1 tomorrow.
I'm going to tee something else up in a second, but I just have to say, I know we worked together last week or something like this. You look fantastic. Your tan is sensational.
Thank you, Jesse.
It looks so good.
This tan is 3 days old.
It looks, I don't know what you're doing. I don't know what products you're using. I tried to extract it out of you earlier. You wouldn't tell me, but it's just it's a phenomenal tan.
And that's so important too, because it's credit. A glimpse into your future, right? Yes. You're going down south very soon as well. So.
I am. If I have the, I don't have the gene like you do, obviously. You just look good.
You might.
It's sensational tan. So we'll see what I can do, but I don't think it'll be able to hold a candle to you. So coming up on Sportsnet at 8:30 tonight, it's the LA Kings and the Chicago Blackhawks. Connor Bedard reached the 20-goal mark on Tuesday night. Part of a 5-point game, 8 points in his last two games, and to tee up what we can expect to see from him tonight and the rest of the Blackhawks and Kings. We'll speak to legendary analyst now with the Hawks and TNT as well, Darren Pang. Panger.
Yeah, Panger. Cannot wait. Players Championship also underway, of course, deep into the second round. It may not be all that interesting, though. Wyndham Clark just running away with things at the moment, but there will be intrigue north of the border if a Canadian can get into the final pair. Nick Taylor and Corey Connors knocking on the door. Taylor closer. We're going to have former PGA pro David Hearn stopping by in about 30 minutes. To discuss the state of Canadian golf, and he was T6 once down at Sawgrass, so we'll get into that with him.
That's got to be in probably the top 3 to 5 of courses that you'd ever want to play, no? Like Augusta's probably one for 90% of the population.
Yeah, I guess I'd have to go through it a little bit, but 17 would just terrify me. Yeah. I probably wouldn't even be able to do it.
We'll ask what David Hearn performed on 17 when he finished T6. NFL news continues to dominate this week as well. We've already seen a ton of player movement, and today a legend retires from the National Football League. Aaron Donald, arguably the best defensive tackle of all time, hanging up the cleats. We'll dig into that story and a little bit more because it has been a wild week in the NFL, JC. Wild.
And Danny Jansen has broken another bone in his wrist and or hand.
He's expected
to miss 2 weeks at minimum, or around 2 weeks, which makes him obviously questionable for opening day. So we'll touch on that a little bit. Of course,
we got best bets,
end of the show. But quickly, before we get to Ailish, Connor Bedard.
Yeah.
Met or missed expectations for you? Quickly, because we got to get to Ailish.
Oh, met. Met without a shadow of a doubt. I mean, you looked at who he was playing with this year, especially at the beginning of the year, and what that roster looked like. I mean, you thought it was him. It was only him. And it really still is only him. And yeah, he has a dash 36, I think it is, which is not great. But that's obviously a byproduct of playing on just a team that is devoid of talent at the moment for the most part. And I think he has absolutely met expectations. I know we throw around generational a lot, but I think as he continues to improve and get bigger and get just a little bit better, you're going to see some incredible numbers from Bedard moving forward. He's almost point per game right now, 51 points in 52 games.
So yeah,
it's been great.
Unquestionably should be the Calder winner. Yeah. I do wonder, though, what he projects to be, because he doesn't have the natural gifts of a McDavid or a Crosby or a Matthews, a little bit of a more diminutive guy, right? And that is translating, but how will it continue to translate? I am interested in that still, exactly what he's going to define himself as. But right now it's the most dominant rookie and a guy at 18 years of age.
Ridiculous.
I think we kind of forget about that a little bit. Every rookie is not 18. This rookie's 18, not turning 19 till midsummer. This is still a young guy, and he can shoot the puck with the best of them, and he's dominating on a bad team, which is really, really impressive, of course. We'll get to that in a little bit with Panger, but let's bring in Forzy, Ailish Forfar, co-host of the Fan Pregame, and in Detroit, ahead of PWHL, Boston, and Ottawa. What's going on, Forzy?
Hey, guys. This is weird. It's like I'm seeing how the sausage is made, the behind-the-scenes Holly in my ear. It's great. It's good to be with you.
I'm sure the introduction with Holly was fantastic. Okay, so what's the nature of these visits for the P-Dub, right? They're going down to cities that don't have teams, at least not yet. So what is the nature of the visit? Why Detroit? Why Pittsburgh? Why go at all?
Yeah, I think this one is pretty self-explanatory. It's Hockey Town. It's a place with a lot of deep hockey roots. Obviously, more of an American male vibe here. There's no women's Division I schools out of the state of Michigan, which is interesting. I think it's going to be a topic we talk about a lot this weekend because there's a lot of women talent coming out of this state, and there's nowhere for them to play. Their youth teams are pumping out content. I remember playing against Little Caesars when I was growing up, and they would have incredible players. There's going to be three Michigan natives out on the ice tomorrow night, but there is no women's professional team here, and there's no NCAA Division I school here. So I think it's a good opportunity to show that this market deserves women's hockey, will thrive with women's hockey. And we're also expecting to have the newest record for American women's professional hockey attended, which was set by Minnesota at the beginning of the season. So tomorrow, Little Caesars Arena, most likely a complete sellout, which would break the all-time record. So it's going to show that these markets deserve a team and that they can hold a team. And so that's what's happening tomorrow in Detroit and Sunday in Pittsburgh. Obviously, Pittsburgh, it's same kind of thing, right? These are places that live and breathe hockey. So great to have new markets get an opportunity to see the women's game at the highest level and get support from the NHL teams, which are doing a lot. The Red Wings and the Penguins are making sure to make this not just a game, but an event, a celebration, and I'm looking forward to seeing how Detroit does it.
I hated playing the Little Caesars too. They're always so good.
Me too.
And so annoying. It was just so frustrating. Mm-hmm. You go down south or wherever to play a tournament, and they come up here, and it was a scheduled L. You know, we say scheduled L's mm-hmm. all the time. It was a scheduled L. So you talked about the incredible attendance, and the league has had a lot of success so far, clearly. Is there an appetite for expansion? Like, is that something that's on the immediate horizon? Or are they planning on kicking the can a little bit further down the road? Because, you know, you and I talked about this earlier in the week with the expansion situation in the National Hockey League, and sometimes too many teams can dilute the product. Mm-hmm. And it seems like the PWHL product right now is spectacular. We talked about the Toronto-Montreal game that had all that rough stuff. Like, the game is great. Is there a need for expansion right away, or is that something that they should address a little further down the line?
Yeah, I think you can get really excited about sellout barn after sellout barn, especially when they're NHL size. But you have to think about the long-term impact of adding in another team, the travel, the facilities, the cost. This is a league that's not even half of a year old. So I think it's great to have that energy. It's great that we're already talking about it. I'm sure these two markets that we're exploring this weekend will be top of the list. But I think you want to hold on until it's bursting at the seams, right? Right at this point, it's been breaking records. It's been exceeding all expectations. But if you expand too fast, does it lose some of that luster? Does the product become watered down? I will say this draft class coming in next year, unbelievable, right? And it's going to be an influx of players that are young, some international, some coming right out of NCAA. So I think you'll notice after a year or two of that, there's not going to be enough spots for some of the best to play. And that's when an expansion should happen. But the fact that we're already talking about it and it's March 15th and this league started January 1st is a really good sign for things to come. But I would say to be cautious mm-hmm. and not bite off more than you can chew.
When it bursts at the seams, like, I guess they want to be ahead of that, right? But you mentioned the draft. You mentioned players who play at a national team level are going to be coming into the league as soon as next mm-hmm. season. Like, will it get to the point where they must expand? Like, within 3 years, is that a must? They have to expand just because the talent is going to be there? Like, you don't want to have really good players not able to play mm-hmm. again, because that's the problem you just had, where mm-hmm. really good players who deserve to play somewhere, like yourself, Ailish, a couple years ago at least, you want them to have a place to play, right?
Yeah, 100%. I think I would be surprised if we get three seasons in and haven't announced an expansion. I think first season is like, let's just get through this. We don't have jersey logos. We don't even have XYZ. Next year, I anticipate an incredible, like, start to finish normal season. And I would think by season three, we'll be talking about, hey, we're announcing an expansion, maybe two, because we want the league to have an even spread. So maybe they would announce two, but there's also an Olympics around the horizon. And that's important because a lot of these national team girls will be training for the Olympics. And you're going to have to figure out just like how that plays into the schedule. I know they have international breaks, but the Olympics usually centralizes players for a couple months. So this will be a different time around how they deal with being full-time professional hockey players and centralized for their national team. So I would say next year, a normal season, like a long normal season, and then we'll talk about expansion. I think that'd be perfect timing.
huge game tonight. Like, what are we expecting tonight between two teams who have been sputtering a little bit, but maybe this is the night that you can get out on the right foot between Boston and Ottawa. What do you think has held these teams back so far in this season, and can they reach those at the top?
First of all, the game is tomorrow at 6 p.m. On Sportsnet 1, and you can catch me there. Just making sure everyone knows where to find it.
You don't have a blazer on yet, Ruby.
I've got my Sportsnet hoodie, though, in the airport. I'm like, hey, Sportsnet, woo. Anyway, so yes, tomorrow, it is a huge game because the new playoff format, well, the new meaning the only playoff format they've ever had, is the top four teams will make the playoffs. The bottom two, since there's only six teams, won't. Right now, Ottawa and Boston are tied with 20 points. The top three teams, Toronto, Minnesota, and Montreal, all have 30. It's a different system. Of course, it's like a three-point system, as we've talked about before on our show. But winning in regulation for either of these teams is so massive. They both have the same amount of games remaining, and they've gotten off to a slower spot. I don't think that they're in the upper echelon of a Toronto, Montreal, and Minnesota, but one team needs to make this push. I think tomorrow will be like a playoff-type feel because you only get so many opportunities to get those six-point games against the team right in lockstep with you. New York kind of even lurking in the distance. They're only 3 points back. So this amount of games remaining, the amount that each game is worth, the 3 points it could be on the line, is going to make this so exciting for fans to follow. And then if you're eliminated, it's even more fun because at that point, you're trying to not tank for first overall. It's the gold plan. So you'll be trying to win for first overall. So I think the way they've set it up just makes every single game worth watching. But tomorrow is going to be really, really important for both these teams to get off on the right foot as the season is right around the corner from being playoffs.
What are you most excited about being there? Because it seems like, you know, you're obviously really thrilled and really excited to be down there. Like, what are you looking forward to the most tomorrow night?
I've actually never been to Little Caesars Arena, and everybody that's been telling me about the new arena says it's unbelievable. Right. You're going to love it. It's got a really great hockey feel. It's going to sell out. It's going to set the new American professional women's hockey attendance. I got to see the Canadian women's hockey attendance, which was at Scotiabank Arena a couple weeks ago. And I just remember being in the stands as a fan thinking, holy crap, I'm going to remember this forever. It was unbelievable. Women's hockey fans showing up of all ages, of all genders, everything. They just wanted to watch unbelievable hockey. And I think tomorrow it could even rival that because this city probably starving for women's hockey. At the other side, when we saw the Toronto team, they already have a women's team. So think about it. Michigan's not getting this ever. They're getting it at the best in the biggest arena, supported by the NHL. It's a 6 p.m. game after the Detroit Red Wings play. So there's already going to be an energy around the arena, around the city. So I'm just excited to be there. I'm going to be between the benches, which I've never done before. So I think that's going to be fun because I have a bunch of friends on both teams and I get to just kind of hear them out. Like, you know, what are they saying? How are they talking? Are they chirping? And it'd just be really nice to tell stories right when they happen too, where, you know, for our show or for other opportunities I've had for games, they're a bit more rehearsed, right? But they could be throwing to me after a play, after a goal, after I see something happen. So a different like work test as well. It'd be really fun to try that out. But just being in the arena, knowing that this is going to be a record-breaking game. I mean, I'm pretty blessed to get to experience that on both sides of Canada and the United States.
Head on a swivel down there, Forzy. Last one for you. You mentioned the gold rule. We're just about to talk to Darren Pang about Connor Bedard and his rookie season. Who's the Bedard lurking for those who are going to have success once they get eliminated from playoff contention in the P-Dub?
Once they get eliminated. Oh, so you mean for first overall pick? Sarah Filliet, for sure. It pains me to say that as she is a Princeton Tiger and a rival of mine with the Dartmouth Big Green. But she's already an Olympic lock. She's already being called the next Marie-Philippe Poulin. She's Canadian, so we'll embrace her. We'll love her. And she'll be the first overall selection. If you could bet on it, I would put a big lock on that. She's unbelievable. So she would be she'd be the prize this year for whoever's going to get her. I'm looking forward to seeing it. But I will say, like, this is a pretty thick and pretty stacked draft class, but she would probably be everybody's number one if we started doing mock drafts.
So
keep an eye out for her.
Where do we get the odds on that?
Huge game for Boston, Ottawa. But, yeah, you want to make the playoffs. But if you lose, maybe you put yourself in position to get Sarah Filliet. I'm looking forward to that future between the benches interview with you and Sarah, because clearly the Ivy League barbs will be going back and forth.
Yeah, man, we'll just use big words like SAT prep words, you know, throw thesauruses at each other.
Okay, we'll let you go, Forzy. We appreciate you jumping on with us. And yeah, can't wait for the broadcast tomorrow. Sportsnet 1 ahead of Hockey Night in Canada. It's going to be great.
Thanks, guys. Miss you. I'll bring you souvenirs.
And she will. She doesn't miss a merch tent, so she's not lying about that. We're probably all getting a lot of stuff back in return. That's very cool. It's very cool that they're going on tour. It's cool that Detroit and Pittsburgh have something of a tryout going on here, right? Like, if you got to prove it, right? You got to prove that this is a destination. Maybe they're going to do this again, because expansion will come, just how soon and where.
Yeah, it's such a fascinating conversation, because Ailish and I earlier in the week literally were having this conversation about adding a 33rd team and then how many more teams to the NHL and what does that do to the product. And the PWHL, it seems like it's hitting every pitch that comes across the plate. They're knocking it out of the park at this current point in time. So you just want to make sure that you don't go too far too fast and lose some of that momentum. But that's a decision for them to have to make. But it seems like that you know, the support is there in a lot of different places right now.
It's been a smashing success, and it's been that way as well for Connor Bedard and the Chicago Blackhawks. Let's bring in Darren Pang, talk about Connor Bedard and the Chicago Blackhawks tonight, of course, going at it with the LA Kings. Darren, thanks for jumping on with us.
Yeah, no problem. How are you guys doing tonight?
We're doing well. So Connor Bedard and expectations. Connor Bedard vis-a-vis expectations. How would you describe, you know, what you expected coming in and how it contrasts with what you're seeing on a night-to-night basis?
No, I think he's just knocked it right out of the park. And I think his last couple of games, he's just reached down there and he's grabbed the top of the Calder Trophy as the Rookie of the Year and said, I'm not going to let this one slip away. You know, I'm lucky on a night-to-night basis to get to see him. Saw him early on in the season where, you know, you saw a lot of junior hockey in him, which is very natural. You saw a lot of games that he wanted to take control of the games. He had, and he extended his shifts, you know, rather long. And now I've seen already such a mature person in how he's playing the game and how he's winning battles, and his line changes are much better. And I'm really impressed with this young man. He's been great to be around. He understands that he is already an ambassador, a top ambassador of the game of hockey, and he handles that part really, really well. And then he handles the on-ice part extremely well as well, guys. So, yeah, we're lucky, and I understand that that the broadcast tonight will be shown on Sportsnet. So that's great. He's been, you know what? He's been putting on a show. The power play's been clicking 10-for-20 in their life. You know, I mean, 50%, you know, in their last, what, six or seven or something like that. And tonight may be the biggest battle of all, though, because when you're talking about, you know, the center icement of the Los Angeles Kings and the structure that they have, this will be a bigger test than he's had the last couple of games.
Yeah, Justin and I were talking about just his age, being 18 years of age, playing in the National Hockey League and being basically a point-per-game guy. He's got 8 points in his last two games, so clearly there's been a lot of growth there. But Panger, you know, you mentioned he had the junior hockey in him a little bit earlier in the season. He's already fixed that. And as great as Connor Bedard is, he's not perfect. So if you were evaluating his game and what you think he can improve as a hockey player, where are you looking?
It's somewhat loaded, but it's fair. Because, you know, being just such a young player. I mean, you know, I asked him after a game, there was two games and maybe two and three, that he played against Ryan O'Reilly. And Ryan O'Reilly, you know, I mean, on the face-off dot, hard on his stick, in the corners, won battles. And afterwards, I just, you know, asked Connor, I said, how was it? And he goes, wow, that guy's good. Like, you know, he's strong on puck. So what area? Well, winning puck battles in the corner, for sure. Finding your old man in the defensive zone, you know, instead of maybe hounding a puck, thinking you can knock the puck out of midair and go the other way. He's very anxious to get the puck and go the other way. And what he does, when he gets the puck on his stick from inside his blue line, I'm telling you, no matter where the Hawks play, there's an anticipation from the fans that they just go, you know, what's he going to do? Because he slides through the neutral zone so well, and he can dissect the neutral zone no matter what coverage it's been. So earlier in the year, you know, maybe got the puck like that and went in into coverage that was a 1-on-3 or 1-on-4, or like the hit that he took in New Jersey, lost a little control of the puck, still leaned into it, bang, Brendan Smith pops him one, and he ends up having a slight fracture of the jaw. You know, now I see him get the puck, and if there's a play that he knows he doesn't have full control of it, he swats it in and he goes and gets it. Right. So those are, again, areas that he's really improved on. I mean, the guy retains a lot of information. Face-offs itself, I mean, you know, there's some games where he can go 0-for-5 in the first period, but that doesn't seem to bother him. He doesn't get rattled from that. And then he turns around in the second period and he might go, you know, 3-for-3 and kind of climb back into the face-off game a little bit. So that maturity and that, I noticed that he really works hard with the coaching staff after practice, not just the things he's good at, firing pucks or making passes through seams, or now all of a sudden he's working on the one-timers and he scored a one-time goal in the last game that I could see it coming. He'd been working on it in practice. And he told me today that that was his first one-time goal that he thinks he scored in 4 years. So he admits he's not a guy that one-times the puck. And John Paddock, his coach at Regina, has been here back and forth a few times. And he told me that as well. He said, boy, he's just so reluctant to fire it. But you know what he's doing? He's working on it. And during the time that he was injured, missed 14 games, he worked on that, you know, in practice. And now he's more confident in the one-timer. And now you're seeing just another evolution of his, you know, of his shooting skills.
Panger, impossible to miss the relationship and the social tidbits that you get between interactions between Connor Bedard and Nick Foligno. It seems like that has been a match made in heaven. How important was it to get Foligno to Chicago to help insulate Connor Bedard?
You have no idea. I mean, honestly, I'm sure there were people around the league that went, oh, yeah, okay, we signed another two-year deal, and Jason Dickinson, the same thing, and Peter Mrazek, but you'd have to start – if you move Nick Foligno at the deadline, that's another guy out of the locker room. It's another guy that can pull Connor aside. And I don't mean pull him aside as if it's father, son, or, you know, big brother. I mean, he pulls him aside, and they rib each other. You've heard some of the, you know, some of the audio on the bench, like even in the last game when Nick was there saying he needs 5 more years to teach you these things and – I can really help you, you know, like just some of the things that he says. And one game Connor said on the bench, he said something like, you know, Nick said, did you see me there? And he said, yeah, well, you're standing still, you're too slow. And then he came back at him, he's like, what, too slow? And so, you know, they go back and forth, and no, you know, it's not like guys are afraid to go back and forth with Connor. They give it to him, he gives it back to them. And, he's got a perfect complement of distributing and taking some jabs along the way. But as far as Nick's concerned, you know, there was a game not long ago. It was a 5-0 loss. It was in Colorado. It was another loss. It was frustrating. And I was on the team playing. I'm going down, and I'm behind about, you know, 5 guys behind. And all I see is Nick Foligno. He's got his arm around Connor, who was frustrated during the game. A hard matchup against Nate MacKinnon, obviously. And you could see that there was a good moment. And if you don't have guys like Nick Foligno, then where does he go? Who does he lean on? Who's going to tell him it's going to be okay? Who's right. going to tell him we've got to be better in this area, you know? And so I tell you one thing nobody has to tell him, and that's to get to the rink early, get on the ice and work on things, and stay on the ice afterwards, because they cannot kick this kid off the ice. It is unbelievable how long he just wants to stay on the ice. And so it's he's laid a great foundation already and a great reputation for himself.
Panger, we're looking forward to it. The best rookie in the NHL. 8 points in his last 2 games on SportsCenter tonight against the LA Kings, and we'll be watching your broadcast. So thanks for jumping on, giving us a little insight, and we'll do this again soon.
Okay, don't get blinded. The LA Kings are wearing those shiny silver lids.
Oh, are they? Okay. Chrome domes. Okay, we're ready. That's Darren Pang of the NHL and TNT and NBC Chicago. Quickly, the Danny Jansen injury, we got about 40 seconds. Out a couple weeks after suffering a fractured pisiform on his right wrist. A fourth time he's had injuries to his hands and wrists in his baseball career. A UFA this offseason. Likely not their opening day. That's kind of the worst thing that could happen to Danny Jansen to start the year, no?
Yeah, it just feels like this is a guy who has tough luck all the time. Like, gets hurt often, and, you know, he's having a great year. His power swing is there. It just seems like he gets injured, and this is obviously not a great time to be getting hurt. You want to start the season with a ton of momentum. And this is a difficult situation for the Jays because then you're going to be relying on Alejandro Kirk a lot in the upcoming season. Start of the season. It's going to be tough.
Big week in the NFL. A lot of news. David Hearn after the break. Fan pregame continues.
Covering the Raptors in depth like no one else. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back on the Fan pregame final half hour of the week. An update for Players Championship. Sawgrass. Nick Taylor's 5 shots off the lead. He's on 15 now. Probably has to birdie twice to get into the final pairing on a Saturday. Maybe it's better that he's not. Sometimes it's good to kind of lurk a little bit. So Nick Taylor, 5 shots behind Wyndham Clark's lead at 14 under. And Corey Connors, 1 back of Nick Taylor. So 2 Canadians in the top 6 right now, or at least T6 or better right now at the Players Championship.
What's your interest level in the PGA Tour compared to previous years right now? Because, you know, they just had Full Swing released on Netflix, which I'm going to start shortly, and I'm a massive, massive golf fan. But I have to be honest, I am the most disillusioned with the PGA Tour that I have probably been since I was younger than the age that I started watching. So I'm not interested at all. And it saddens me deeply. And a lot of it is traced back to what's happening with Liv, because I can't mentally get over, you know, watching something when I know that there's this other tour that exists that has all these great players. It makes it quite difficult for me to get over that fact that it's not the best of the best playing every week. It's frustrating for me. I want to see everybody get back together.
I do too. And we will. We'll get that in the majors
a little bit. Love that.
But it does feel like it's lacking greatness to a certain extent. And maybe that's because Rory McIlroy can't go out there and dominate events, or at least hasn't been of late. He's missing something on the weekend. He's missing something this week. He didn't have a good round to follow up yesterday. So I think it's missing that like alpha dog. But then again, did an alpha dog really leave? I mean, John Rahm was pretty close, but is it like all of them left? I'm not really sure. Let's get into it with our next guest here, David Hearn, Canadian PGA member, T6 at Sawgrass back in 2014. Thanks for dropping by, David.
All right. Thanks for having me, guys.
So, I just mentioned T6 2014. You know, what does Sawgrass mean to you, and how does that result rank among your best PGA Tour moments?
Yeah, you know, I never did win on the PGA Tour. I came close a bunch of times. So, you know, those tournaments were always highlights when I had a chance to win the golf tournament. But, you know, outside of those finishes, there's no doubt in my mind that Players Championship has always been considered one of the top events. And and that's an event that I'll always look back on as a highlight in my career, no doubt about it.
What's it like stepping up to 17? Because for amateur golfers, you have a dream of playing just a number of holes in your lifetime, if you could ever get to those courses. And I have to think that 17 at Sawgrass is up there as probably one of the top 3 holes that people dream about ever getting to play. So what was it like stepping up to 17 at Sawgrass in contention, no less, in 2014?
Yeah, you know, it's just a 130-yard shot, boys. just a 130-yard shot, you can't miss the green, right?
Right.
So, no, it's... Yeah, you know, when you're playing well, it's, you're trying not to look at, you know, all the trouble, but no doubt, you know, you get to that hole, you know where you got to put it. If you're in good control of the ball, especially on Sunday, that back right pin, there's not a lot of room back on that shelf. So, it's an intimidating hole, and that's what Pete Dye does. You know, like his designs, look at all of his golf courses, he tries to intimidate. And, you know, to your point, guys, that's one of the top, you know, Pete Dye golf courses ever, or golf holes ever designed. It's fun. I managed to get through there pretty well over the years. I know Adam had a bit of trouble there this year, finally hit one in the drink, but I don't know if there's really anybody that's going to get through without there making a mistake at some point in time. I hit it in there one time, I think, but you know, it's going to happen. It's just that type of hole. You're going to make a mistake one day.
And I would make a mistake every single time up there. David, we were just, I don't know if you heard us talking about coming in, but like kind of the emotion watching golf now, Jesse's saying a little disillusioned watching it because you know it's not the best of the best anymore, or it's not, you know, everyone who deserves to be in the top, you know, 140 in a field, at least with a signature event, because frankly, other guys just got up and left. Mm-hmm. So what's your emotion seeing golf in the last couple of years, watching the product now, watching the PGA Tour now? How does it make you feel?
Yeah, you know, you guys are spot on. I think there's a lot of different feelings going around the golf world right now, and it's something that we haven't seen in golf for a very long period of time. You know, it's obviously created a little bit of a division. There's a little divisiveness in the game right now. You know, I don't think there's a lot of, like, hard feelings between certain players. Some of them maybe, but certainly not all of them. You know, the guys that made that choice to go over to the LIV Tour, you know, you made that choice. You had an educated decision, and you made that choice. And you knew when you went over there there were going to be repercussions to that. And, you know, some guys kind of went on their way and just went about their business. And some guys obviously have been more vocal. And, you know, so it is what it is. But to your point, you know, absolutely. You look at that Players' Championship leaderboard, and I remember, you know, when the years that I played it was always known as, you know, one of the top fields in the world. And I'm not saying it isn't right now, but the perception is the hard part, is that, you know, is like Louis Oosthuizen, who was a great player for a long, long time, but is he truly one of the game's greats at this point in time? Mm-hmm. I don't know, but the perception, he's a well-known name, and not having a name like that in the field has an impact on what you're looking at when you're looking at that field. And no doubt a lot of those players that are there, they might very well be the best players in the world, but they're just not name recognizable yet. So, especially with the number of players that have left to go over to LIV. And no doubt, you know, a player like John Rahm and Cam Smith and Dustin Johnson, these are top-ranked players in the world. They're, you know, the finest that have played. It's unfortunate not to have those guys in a field like that. But again, you know, those guys left and knew the decision they were making and the consequences to that. You know, I don't know what the solution is. You know, like we can talk a lot about it, you know, come up with ideas. But it's an interesting time in golf. And I think we all, like you guys were saying, I think we all want to see some type of resolution at some point in time. But, you know, I just don't know when that's going to be. Your guess is as good as mine on that. So.
Yeah, it feels like Jay Monahan's in a bit of a pickle at this current point in time, a commissioner of the PGA Tour, obviously. One of the silver linings, I think, in the golf world is just the state of Canadian golf. And obviously, it culminated with Nick Taylor's win at the Canadian Open, just a ridiculous memory that all of us will be able to hang on to for an extremely long time. But what can you say about, you know, your peers in Canadian golf at this current point in time? Even this week, we're seeing Nick and Corey right up there on the first page of the leaderboard. Like, what do you make of just the success that Canadians have had on the PGA Tour as of late?
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. You know, I was a part of it sort of a few years ago. I'm obviously not at the top of my game at this point in time, but, you know, I was kind of at the, you know, we had a bunch of players on the PGA Tour when I was playing my best golf, maybe four or five at sometimes. But at this particular moment in time, you know, it's a really special time in Canadian golf. And I think we need to be very proud of our players. And you know, as much as we want to see more and more get out there, and I know there's the chance of that, you know, we also have to realize, you know, this might be as good as it's going to be for a little while and just sit back and enjoy it. You know, Nick, he's been on the tour for a long period of time and, you know, he's had some success and he's had some struggles. And he's just right on top of his game right now. It's fun to watch. He's obviously playing with a ton of confidence. Short game is awesome. You know, when that putter gets going, like you guys watched at the Waste Management Open this year, you know, down the stretch, just as clutch as can be, fun to watch. And, you know, you go down the list. Corey Connors, you know, one of the best ball strikers in the game of golf today. Mac Hughes just always seems to be clutch when he's in that moment as well. Great short game. Adam Hadwin, he's just, you know, well-rounded, solid player. Then he wins last year, you know, Ben Silverman's back on it's you're, like you guys are saying, like I could go on and on. It's pretty cool to think that we have this many players out there. They've won some big tournaments and, you know, I think that the next step for these guys is obviously, and they talked about a little bit heading into the Players Championship, is competing for tournaments like this one. You know, last year at the PGA, a few guys had a shot, you know, there on Sunday and yeah, it's pretty cool to watch. Sorry to interrupt there. Go ahead.
No, it is. It's very cool. And if there's like a silver lining for Canadians as it pertains to the larger golf ecosystem right now, Not to say, you know, Nick Taylor wouldn't be at the top of the leaderboard right now if John Rahm and Dustin Johnson were in the field, but no Canadians going does breed some opportunity, right? And I do think Nick Taylor is definitely seizing that moment. But I want to ask you about, like, the ability to win and maybe what separates Nick from the other Canadian golfers. I mean, you just kind of mentioned the wins for several of them, and Corey Connors has won the Valero Texas Open twice. But is there a difference between being the best golfer and the best, or the golfer with the most upside? And this may be changing a little bit, but it seems like Taylor is most live to win, where Connors might just be the best overall golfer. Is there something there where it's like, hey, there's whether it's streakiness or just the ability to have that killer instinct versus, you know, that consistency, but the consistency that might have a bit of a ceiling on it?
Yeah, you know, I think that, you know, that's the intangible we look for in all the sports, right? You know, like the guy that's clutch, the guy that does it in that moment. And, you know, Nick just seems to be that guy right now. It seems like when he's in that moment, he's able to pull through and find a way to make it happen. And, you know, I wish we all could kind of figure that out. And sometimes, you know, I was talking to some of my friends about it, and, you know, we were saying sometimes it's, you know, when you're early in your career, it's, you know, you get in those moments and sometimes you succeed and sometimes you don't. And sometimes, you know, if you get a good break at the right time, you know, your path could change drastically. You just really never know about that. And, you know, Nick, he's always been a competitor at every level. He was, you know, world number one amateur before he turned professional. And when he got onto the PGA Tour, he won very, very quickly, but no doubt he went through a bunch of struggles there for a good period of time. So, you know, I think he's seen both sides of it, but I mean, yeah, he's got something special to where when he gets in that moment, you know, he has an ability to pull through. Corey, you know, I think just, you know, I think his ability when he's maybe not on to just still be there is why he's so consistent. You know, I wonder if it's just going to take, you know, one good putting week or a few good things to happen to him and for him to get on a bit of a streak, you know, get another win and, you know, go for a little bit of a run on it. But who knows? You know, I think we all wish we had the answer as to why some guys are clutch and some guys aren't. So, but Nick seems to be that guy right now.
I mentioned Nick's win at the Canadian Open and that ridiculous putt at Oakdale and, you know, what it kind of set off in Canadian sports as far as a memory is concerned. And obviously you finished third in 2015 at the Canadian Open, like being, you know, his peer and someone who was, you know, on the first page of the leaderboard at the Canadian Open at 1.2, like what did seeing him follow through with the victory, like what did that mean for you? What do you think it meant for Canadian golf? Because, you know, I'm a massive golf fan. And when I think about memories, honestly, over the course of my lifetime, having watched things live, I think that will always be up there as one of the great Canadian sporting moments, which is saying something because it's not every day that that memory comes from the world of golf, but in this case it did.
Absolutely, and I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, how special was it for him to, you know, be in that moment and make a putt like that? You know, it's funny you talk about, you know, moments and memories and stuff like that. So for me, you know, I got two young boys. I got three children, but my two young boys are into golf a little bit, so I'll take them to the golf course every once in a while. And you talk about the lasting impression, and my boys will be on the green, and they'll be, hey, Dad, is this putt 72 feet? And I'm like, yeah, you know, no, not quite. You know, so, like, even there at young age, they're, you know, they're very aware of how cool a moment that was. And, you know, it's cool to see our RBC and Golf Canada kind of brand that the Canadian Open Championship this year, or Canadian Open this year on that putt and everything. They've got some cool stuff coming at us, so. Yeah, I mean, that's no doubt. That's right up there in Canadian golf history. There's so many guys that came close. Like, I came close. Wiersey was in the playoff against VJ. Hadwin had a year. He was close out at Shaughnessy. A lot of guys had chances. And, you know, I've been buddies with Nick for a long time, and I couldn't be happier that he was the guy to finally do it. And, you know, he said it, so he's very humble. And I think that's part of the reason he's very successful, and he kind of gets through those tricky times. But, you know, he said himself that, you know, that win was for everybody, for all the guys that have been there. And it's kind of true. You know, we've all been close. We knew it was going to happen. And, you know, it was just great to see somebody break through. And you know, I couldn't be more proud of him and happy for him and his family. It'll be a memory I remember forever. Mm-hmm. Like, that was pretty awesome.
You didn't get tackled on the green with a bottle of champagne in your hand. But what was your vantage point for that?
So, you know, I thought about heading back. Unfortunately, I missed the cut, so I didn't make it to the weekend last year. So I was back at Bradford. I played golf on Sunday with my friends that I play almost every Sunday with. And, we're having a beer on the patio at Bradford Golf Country Club. We had the big screen on, and, I was just happy to watch it there. And, everybody was glued to it, watching it. Such a cool moment. And then, obviously, when Hadwin got tackled, I was very happy I didn't drive back down, So that was...
you don't want to be a meme, David?
Yeah, I know. No, I'm good.
So you mentioned, a lot of you guys have been close. And I wonder if the weight of expectations, the weight of history, affected how any of you played. And I guess you can tackle that if you want, not Adam Hadwin style, but you can tackle that subject if you want. But I wonder now, spinning it forward, do you think it's going to be easier for Canadians to play at the Canadian Open now that, no one's talking about how long it's been?
Yeah, it might be a little bit easier, but, it's still a PGA golf tournament, and it's still, it's not easy to win a PGA golf tournament. We're talking about the best in Canada right now, and, what's Nick up to? Is he four wins now? And Max on two, and Corey's on two, and, we're talking thousands of events between all these guys, and there's not that many wins. So, but there's no doubt, probably a little bit of weight has been lifted. It'll be funny to see when we get there this year if they say, it's been a year since somebody won. What do you think's going to happen this year? But I don't know. But, that was definitely the question that guys were getting forever is, we knew how long it was. And it might take a little bit of weight off some of the guys. But it's still, you're still playing in front of the hometown crowd, and that's never easy. And it's definitely, everybody wants to do their best at home. So, it was pretty cool now that, Brooke did it on the ladies' side, and now Nick did it on the men's side. It's pretty awesome. Golf in Canada is in a good spot.
I remember, watching you at the 2015 Canadian Open like it was yesterday in contention. What's your plan now? What's the state of your game at? How do we get you back into a T3 at the Canadian Open? How do we get you there?
Yeah, if we could roll back a few years, I'd have a little bit better chance. But, I'm 44 this year. I turned 45 right around the Canadian Open. So, my trajectory in golf isn't going up as much as it used to. So, I'm still working at it. I still have some status on the PGA Tour. And a lot of the things we were kind of discussing earlier with the LIV Tour, there's been a giant ripple effect all the way down. And, events that, I played a lot of years on the PGA Tour. I earned veteran status out there. Which gives me a tour card every year still. That status used to get you in a lot more events than it does now, just sort of the change of direction and what they're trying to do on the tour. So, I really don't know what my future looks like, a few years down the road. If I can kind of get playing really good golf here and find a little bit of something in my game, I'd like to still be competitive and play, and obviously – I'm starting to inch up on that Champions Tour a little bit closer, but I've been doing a little bit of broadcasting this year in between some of my events, and I'm still working at it. That never goes away. I think your passion for the game and your that work ethic that I've always had, it hasn't gone away. So when I do get some starts, hopefully later this spring and into the summer, hopefully I'll be ready to go and see if I can get a little bit of a roll. But like I say, the trickle down of access and some of these elevated events has changed the landscape of the PGA Tour. So, like it or not, the LIV Tour has had a lasting impact already. So.
When you talk to, your friends and your peers on tour who are in the same sort of status as you, is there a frustration there in the direction that the PGA Tour is going? I know that, Matt Hughes is pretty vocal on Twitter when it comes to this sort of thing and discussing the state of the PGA Tour, because that's something that you guys talk about, amongst yourselves, because the tour is obviously trying new things. They held a signature event at Bay Hill just last week. And, there's mixed reviews from the fans. There's mixed reviews from some of the players. I'm just wondering, you mentioned the trickle-down effect. Is that something that you talk about with your peers on tour and sort of wonder why they're going in a certain direction at times?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, what else are we going to talk about? there's no doubt that, the thing is, though, and you got to keep it in perspective, there's 200 guys that play regularly on the PGA Tour, and there's 250 cards that are handed out every year, whatever the numbers are. So, that's 250 different opinions, right? Mm-hmm. And everybody has a different perspective and a different reason, a different whatever. So, you talk to one guy, and obviously, they like things a certain way because it maybe benefits them, or that's just the way they see it. You know, you talk to another guy, you're always going to get difference of opinions. And that's where, you know, I think like leadership, you know, needs to do the best job they can do to, you know, kind of make the best decisions for the tour. And in a time like this, there's no doubt some of these changes happen very quickly. Some guys are very frustrated. You know, I think a lot of the decisions that have been made on the PGA Tour the last few years, you know, Jay, say what you will or whatever, he's been dealt a tough deck. There's no doubt about it. You know, only history will tell us how well he played it. Right now, you know, I think a lot of their stuff's been a little bit reactionary. And there's no doubt, you know, when you're losing guys like Rombo, you can understand where that's coming from. You know, you want to keep the top talent on the PGA Tour because it trickles down, you know, the marketing, the advertising, TV, everything, you know, like that allows your tour as a whole to earn more. And, you know, it's, you know, the game's a little bit divisive right now. So, you know, there are a lot of opinions running around right now. You know, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, how it all trickles out, you know, like this SSG investment and, the equity program that they've come up with. You know, Mac and Nick are on that pack this year. I was on that for a long time. So those guys are very involved with a lot of the decisions that are coming through the pipeline. So, you know, I've always appreciated Mac and his openness and his, you know, the way he's just been honest about what he thinks. And, you know, he's a bright guy. You know, his opinions are valid. So, you know, the tour is, by principle, supposed to support all of its members. So are they doing that right now? Probably not to the best of their ability, but the reason is probably because they're trying to kind of keep that sort of like prime position in the world stage. So we'll see how it all. We'll talk next year and see where we're at. I don't think anybody knows how it's gonna finish.
Hey, David, thanks so much for jumping on, and best of luck with wherever golf takes you next.
All right, guys, I appreciate it. Good to talk to you, and yeah, enjoy the weekend. Hopefully we get a Canadian on top of that board at the Players.
There you go, a birdie's got Nick Taylor within four. So he's a birdie away from the final pairing. We appreciate it, David, and we'll do this again soon.
Thanks, David.
It's David Hearn, thanks, Canadian guys. PGA thanks. Member. Hopefully awesome. He'll be back at the RBC Canadian Open this summer. T6 in 2014 at Sawgrass, and of course, Wyndham Clark has the lead there. Okay, we got a couple minutes for some NFL items from just today. I think all these NFL items are just today. It's been a week.
Yeah,
in the NFL,
it's nuts, man.
Aaron Donald retires. Yeah. Announces retirement after 10 years. Kenny Pickett gets traded to the Eagles. Russell Wilson now the only QB on the depth chart for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Vikings. This might have been last night. Vikings trade a second first round pick, so they've armed themselves with picks to potentially make a move at the draft. Chargers send Keenan Allen to the Bears. Hollywood Brown ends up with the Kansas City Chiefs. What out of that, and it probably is Aaron Donald, has your attention?
Yeah, it's definitely Aaron Donald. I know there were rumors about him potentially retiring before last season, or even, you know, when they had won the Super Bowl. That was something that he had brought up. I mean, this is a guy who has just dominated his position for so long. And when you think about some of the best defensive tackles of all time, I don't know how you can possibly put anyone's name, you know, up there without him having, you know, having his name right there alongside them, because he was such a dominant force for so long. And it's a shame that, you know, we won't get to watch him anymore, but, you know, he accomplished a ton in the National Football League, and he deserves to ride off into the sunset on his terms, better than, you know, being injured and being forced, which, you know, we unfortunately see happen to a lot of guys in the NFL. So good for him.
Yeah, I was a little surprised. I guess I shouldn't have been, because, you know, we've heard him talk about it before.
Yeah.
But the LA Rams are on a pretty sizable
good
upswing.
Trajectory.
They've found it again. I mean, they almost got past the Lions in the playoffs just this past year in a season where they should have been fully rebuilding. No expectations whatsoever.
Yep, yep.
You got Puka Nacua, who might be a star in the league. Matthew Stafford, healthy now, but, you know, that can be variable from week to week. But this team seemed like, hey, that long rebuild, you don't need it. Matthew, you could win again in the Matthew Stafford era, but without Aaron Donald, I don't know if you can.
Yeah.
So for this, with this news that we've got today, and in terms of what really matters, and that's the Super Bowl, I kind of think we scratched a name off the list of potential winners in the Rams, because the guy who was the anchor of their defense, the guy who made mismatches because he was himself a mismatch, is not there anymore. So now I'm thinking, can the Rams compete this year? Maybe they're back on that longer trajectory that they had before. Quickly, I got a best bet for today. You got a best bet for today?
I'll let you just take it from here.
Okay, I'll take it. We talked to Panger about Bedard. I don't think it's going to be Bedard's night. I got the LA Kings on the puck line, minus 105. The Kings haven't been great lately.
Yeah.
Bedard has been, but I think there are levels to this. I think the Kings get it done tonight on Sportsnet. Raptors also in action.
Yeah.
Might not go well for them either. That's the Fan pregame. That's Jesse. That's Justin Ailish back on Monday. We'll do it again.